Okay, reading from Jagadharma Chapter 5. Those who covet mystic powers, siddhi kamis, follow karma kanda. And those who cultivate monistic knowledge, jnananishtas, follow jnana kanda. The ishanugatas are the only devotees of Ishvara. The jnani kandis and the karma kandis pride themselves on being interested in higher attainments, paramarthika. But in reality, they are not pursuing the highest goal, but seeking temporary material gain. And whatever they say about dharma is naimittika, circumstantial or temporary. So I don't really think I need to put it too much in context. I'm pretty sure the people who are listening have been there before. But we're in the part of Omagana, Timodandasya, Gananjana Shalakaya, Naksulamritam Yena, Tasmai Shri Gurave. Chaitanya Manogishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Gadhati Satagantikam Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Shindu Bhayevacha Adhidhanam Bhavanebhyo Vanshtadebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Vyagvaita Gadadhar Sivasade Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we're in the part of Jagadharma where Lahari Mahasai is joining the ashram of Prem Das Babaji and Gojram Dweep. And they're mostly bhajananandis. They take pleasure in their personal practices, chant many, many lakhs, many, many rounds a day. And Lahari used to be an aristocratic land owner from a smart Brahmin family. And he was in discussion with one of the residents there, Vaishnav Das, who was formerly Sannyas Thakur, who was an impersonalist sannyasi. He understands the concept of devotional service, and he's now living in the ashram very happily practicing Krishna consciousness. He has grown up sons, so he's actually obviously elderly and therefore has the adhikari, the qualification, the blessings to lead a retired life in the Indian culture, which reflects the knowledge given in the Vedas. This world is temporary. And you have to work through your desires and come to a point where you can actually become free from them. And then as you're approaching that, as you're living a life in that way, or by the association of an exceptionally influential Vaishnava, in the second half of one's life, one gets less involved in family life, and in exceptional cases, one may become completely renounced. So Lahari is there, and his family is not happy about it. But the reason they're not happy about it is because in their culture, Vaishnavism is not respected, and therefore their father joining the Hare Krishna movement reflects badly on themselves. You can extend the concept of the self to family, but If it's limited there, it's also selfish. Because the consciousness is such that it can extend the conception of the self beyond itself. But you're still doing things for yourself, because that's the body in which you identify in relationship with endorsing your own ego. So it's better than being selfish, but it's not as good as being humanitarian. And being humanitarian is not as good as one who can embrace all living entities. And highest of all, is one who is completely surrendered to God, because he's in the service of everyone, because he sees everyone as in the same family, the cosmic, universal family of God. Anyway, Lahari has evolved his consciousness, this temporary world is full of suffering, chant the holy name of Krishna is your only business. Our eternal relationship is with Krishna, others are temporary. Again, in Bhakti, we're reading this in Bhakti Lok, that in Bhakti, if you have attachments, you can embrace them if they're connected with God, including raising a Krishna conscious family, or eating nice prasadam, or whatever things you do. But this is a legitimate realization on his part. He's got the association of such elevated Vaishnavas. And as one gets old, and the gray hairs come, and the hearing goes, and the liver gets weak, and the knees start to buckle, the sensitive person is seeing that as the language of God informing him that his days as an enjoyer are numbered, and he should seek pleasure in something beyond the temporary, which is full of duality and therefore full of suffering. And he enters into the ashram and his concerned son goes to see him. And his son is a professor of logic, but in discussing with his father, he understands that his father has some deep knowledge. And we're discussing higher than intellectual knowledge is knowledge of the soul. Because the soul is higher than the intelligence. So if one is fixed in devotional service, a certain realization comes. One automatically can see the truth. Although he may not be able to quote so many verses, he has spiritual knowledge. He based on the soul and being fixed in the ultimate reality, because being fixed in the soul is being fixed in God. Because what we are is a relationship to God. So to understand the soul means to understand God. And one has a certain inherent vision and realization, a perspective to see truth. And also in that connection with God, and in the control of one's senses in the dedicated service of God, one can hear God speaking to him within the heart. We quote this verse many, many times. Tesham satatiyak dhanam vajatam prithi purvakam. One who worships me with love and devotion, dadami bhuti yogam. I give them knowledge. And therefore, in that kind of state and perspective, where one is looking at scriptures not in terms of getting learning to have power over others, being able to control the world, because knowledge is power. You read in terms of changing yourself. And when you read in that way, the text speaks to you in very, very profound ways. So even Devadasi is a learned logician. He is impressed with his father. And he asks his father, and his father tells him about his guru, Vaishnav Das. So he goes to Vaishnav Das, and Vaishnav Das asks him what he's learning. And it's obviously that he studied Shankara's commentary on the Vedanta. And Vaishnav Das is not impressed. He says that this is more or less a recent creation. And the history is that when, as is nature, which is human nature, unfortunately, when Brahmins took the sanctions in the scriptures for animal sacrifice and meat eating in very restrictive and prohibitory ways for people who were degraded, and took the sanctions and rejected and kind of minimized the prohibitions, and on the basis of the Vedas, therefore opened up slaughterhouses, which destroys the whole foundation of spiritual life and controlling your mind, which is first controlling your mind in relationship to others, but the people exploiting people. Then Lord Buddha appears. And therefore, to stop the slaughterhouses, he has to denigrate the authority on which they are accepted, which is the Vedas. Even though it's a misinterpreting of the Vedas. But because the Vedas contain the foundational knowledge of human life, and Shankaracharya comes to reestablish the Vedas. And preaches a similar philosophy to the Buddhists, because Buddhism, Emperor Shoka, became very widely, and basically they drove the Buddhists out of India. Buddhism is not big in India. It started in India, but it went out to other places outside of India. So there is some historical facts about this in terms of it's not in India. It's not in India. How? Because Lord Shiva incarnated as Shankaracharya to reestablish the Vedas. And to do so, he had to preach a similar philosophy, emphasize a similar philosophy to the Buddhists, but establish it on the basis of the Vedas. And I see it's hard for any other religion to too substantially take root in India because of the depth of the tradition. Just like I said here in Vrindavan, there was a church across the street from the Krishna Balaram Mandir near the Prakram Path. And I used to go in there, I used to get their little book, How I Found God and How God Found Me. And the man, you know, somehow he was successful in converting a few people, and he got this land and everything, but now, you know, it's no more. It didn't have, it's really have to have a basis to establish that. It's no more, and it's kind of samadhi is a parking lot for the taxi wallets. Anyway, he tells him that Shankara's philosophy is more or less a recent creation. And uh, as Prabhupada says in Tija Lok Chaitanya, it was a timely necessity, but not an absolute fact. Either that or he's speaking about Buddhism. The timely necessity. Buddhistic conception is basically atheistic. So Shankaracharya, appealing to those people, because it way the Vedant is an extreme, it is pretty much a minority view in Indian philosophical thought. There are six darshans, six philosophical systems that can be gleaned from the Vedas. And accept, and almost all accept the eternality of the soul, that our individuality is not illusion, but it's our nature, that we're a part of God, we're not God, and that in liberation we remain individuals. So it's basically a minority view. And he says, so this Devi Das wants to learn Vedanta, and Vaishnav said the best is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who is the most learned person of his time. And it's a fact, he was converted to Vaishnavism by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who listened to him for 7 days and then told him, I don't really understand your explanations. You know, and then he explained what real Vedanta is. So, anyway, Devi Das is being influenced, but still he wants his father still to come home. He said, that's my real objective. And the father says, well, Lahari says, you're not a Vaishnava. And this is a common theme of really what is Nitya Dharma? What is the eternal occupation of the living entity? And this point has to be cleared up, because Devi Das thinks, well, I am a Vaishnava. What do you mean I'm not a Vaishnava? I worship the deities, I chant prayers, I do meditation. So now Lahari explains there are two types of people, Vaika and Paramattika. One whose goal is temporary material enjoyment, and one who desires a superior attainment in the future. And the people who desire a superior attainment in the future are three types: Ishanugatas, Jnananishtas, and Siddhikamis. One who desires mystical perfection, one who desires a merging into the Absolute, and one who wants to eternally remain a servant of the Absolute. And the Siddhi, those who are Siddhi, they believe God is subordinate to the laws of karma. So they don't actually respect God. They believe there's powerful universal laws, which, if they follow them, they can, control material nature in a very, very powerful way, the mystic cities. And then there's the Jnananishtas, who believe that bhakti and Bhagavan are just temporary manifestations to be given up after one achieves Gyan, or full realization of my undifferentiated oneness with God. So now we'll read on as he's talking. He said, those who come, okay. So he's saying the only real devotees, Vaishnava means devotees of Vishnu, are those who accept that God is the absolute eternal living entity and not just a temporary product of the modes of nature that serves as a stepping stone to get to something higher. The only ones are the Ishanugatas, those who are believe in the eternal reality of God. And the eternal reality of bhakti requires an eternal exchange between the living entities and God. So, the present-day worshippers of Shiva, Durga, Ganesh, and Surya, known respectively as Shaivas, Shaktis, Ganapatyas, and Suryas, and all follow Jnanakanda. They adopt the limbs of bhakti, such as Shravan and Kirtan, only to attain mukti and ultimately the undifferentiated, impersonal Nirvishesha Brahman. So they perform it and they worship God only to attain something which they believe is beyond God. In the first commentary of Bhagavad Gita that Prabhupada was using in America before he translated his own by Dr. Radhakrishnan, who's the vice president of India, something like a scholar, president of India. There's a verse in Bhagavad Gita which says, Manmanabhava Madhvato Madhyachi Mam Namaskaro. Worship me, surrender to me. And the commentary is, it is not to Krishna that one has to surrender, but the unborn beginningless within Krishna. And in the purport, Prabhupada quotes, Deha dehi, nevedyo yam nishvare vidyukte kuchit. In the absolute reality, there's no difference between the deha and the dehi. Nishvare kvijit. Deha dehi nabhedyo yam. Nishvare vidyate kvijit. Those who know, the deha and the dehi nishvare vidyate. Dehi nabhedyo yam. There's no difference in the absolute reality. You can't say we worship the unborn beginningless within Krishna. No, the absolute reality, there's no difference. And he's saying Krishna is standing right before Arjuna on the battlefield and saying, surrender unto me. And then the commentary is, no, not to you. To something else. Those who engage among these five deities to form Sri Muti of Bhagavan Sri Vishnu is eternal, transcendental, and full of potency. Those who do not accept Bhagavan as the object of worship are merely worshiping temporary objects. My son, the service that all of you render at home to the deity of Bhagavan is not paramatika because you do not accept the eternality of Bhagavan's form. That is why you cannot be counted among the Ishanugatas. Now I hope you've understood the difference between Nitya and Naimittik Upasana or worship. Your worship is not Nitya because you don't believe it's eternal, because you don't believe the object of worship is eternal, nor do you believe the practice is eternal. So your worship, by your own definition, is Naimittika. It's temporary. It's not Nitya. It's not eternal. And Vaishnavas believe that the form of God is eternal, the worship of God is eternal, and the worship of God is eternal. Baby Das, yes, if one worships the Sri Vigraha of Bhagavan, but does not accept that the vigraha is the form of the Lord as eternal, then it is not worship of an eternal object. However, can't one adopt a temporary means of worship to attain the eternal truth, which is ultimately distinct from any such temporary forms? Lahari, even if that were the case, such temporary worship cannot be called the eternal dharma. Nitya dharma is the worship of the eternal vigraha as performed in Vaishnava dharma. Don't call it nitya dharma then. Even if you believe that, it's not the same as Vaishnavism. Vaishnavism believes that the form of God is eternal. We believe that God is impersonal and personal. And if you deny the form of God, you're limiting God. Not that you're limiting God by ascribing a form to God, but you're limiting God by denying that within God. Devi Das, but Sri Vigraha, that is worship, is fashioned by a human being. So how can it be eternal? Lahari, the Vigraha worshipped by the Vaishnavas is not like that. Bhagavan is not formless like Brahman. On the contrary, he is the all-powerful, concentrated embodiment of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. It is that Satchidananda Gana Vigraha that is the worshipable deity of the Vaishnavas. Bhagavan's transcendental form of eternity, bliss, and knowledge is first revealed in the pure consciousness of the jiva, and then it is reflected in the mind. Listen to this carefully. It's a little technical, but it's an incredible point. The external form of the deity is fashioned according to the transcendental form revealed in the mind, and by the power of bhakti yoga, the Satchidananda form of Bhagavan then manifests in the deity. When the devotee takes darshan of the deity, that deity unites with the transcendental form of Bhagavan that the devotee sees in his heart. So he's saying, no, this is not fashioned by a human being, but rather great self-realized souls going deep into their heart in the process of bhakti bhajan have actually seen God. And therefore, their form is manifest according to that direct vision. And then when they see God, then the form in their heart is one with what they see externally. And that's what deity worship's about. It's the thought in your heart that manifests externally. So this is very, this is a very powerful conception. The deity that the Jnanis worship, however, is not like that. They think that the deity is a statue made of material elements, but that the state of Brahman is present in it while they are conducting their worship, and then it becomes a mere material statue again after they have finished their worship. Now you should consider the difference between these two conceptions of the deity and their respective worship. One obtains Vaishnava Diksha by the mercy of a genuine guru, he will be able to observe the results of both and understand the difference. So it's not just material, but the Vaishnava conception is that form of the heart, which also corresponds to the form of God mentioned in the scriptures. When fashioned by a Vaishnava and empowered by a Vaishnava, becomes Ishvara eyes, it becomes God eyes, it becomes Krishna eyes. It is God. The deity is God. So he says, and look at the different conceptions that we have. So even though you're worshiping and doing Shravana and Kirtan, you can't say it's the same thing. Devi Das. Yes, now all this makes sense to me, more sense to me. Now I see that the Vaishnavas are not just fanatics driven by blind faith. Rather, they are endowed with subtle and discriminating insight. There's a major difference between the worship of Sri Murti and the temporary worship of an imaginary form of the Lord that has been imposed on a material object. It's not idol worship. There is no difference in the external procedures of the worship, but there is a vast difference in the faith of the two worshipers. I will think about this for some days. Father, today my greatest doubt has been dispelled. Now I can say emphatically that the Gyanis' worship is merely an attempt to cheat Bhagavan. I will submit this topic to your feet at a later time. After saying this, Devi Vidyaratna, that's Devi Das, and Shambhu, his cousin, departed to their residential quarters. They returned to Lahari in the late afternoon, but there was no opportunity for further topics. At that time, everyone was immersed in Harinam's Sankirtan. Oh, Nityananda, Haribo, Haribo. The following afternoon, everyone seated themselves in Paramahamsa's bower. And Devi Vidyaratna and Shambhu sat next to Lahari Mahasai. Just then, the Kazi from the village of Brahmana Pushkarini arrived. When the Vaishnavas saw him, they all stood up to offer him respect. And the Kazi also greeted the Vaishnavas with great pleasure and then sat in the assembly. Kazi is the Muslim ruler. The Muslim ruler comes. This is an incredible novel, isn't it?
Inspiring.
Very inspiring. And it's so nice that I'm able now again to go over each of the things, because it revised all the touches. You learn all the touches, and then we'll read Prabhupada's books and understand also, you know, see how Prabhupada has presented all these touches. Karma. Paramahamsa Babaji said, "You are blessed, you are descendant of Chankazi, who is an object of the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Kindly bestow your mercy upon me." The Kazi said, "By the mercy of Sri Mahaprabhu, we have become the objects of mercy of the Vaishnavas. Gauranga is the Lord of our life. We do not do anything without first offering our dandavats. So even today, Mayapur is the Chankazi Samadhi. Have you seen that? Yeah, it's right on the same road as the yoga pit, a little further down. And sometimes you'll see like some pure Muslim guy there by Chankazi Samadhi. The Vaishnavas also go there. The Kazi said, "By the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we become the objects of the mercy of the Vaishnavas." Okay. Dari was a learned scholar in the Farsi language, and he had studied the 30 Sipahars of the Quran and many books of the Sufis. He asked the Kazi, "According to your ideology, what is meant by mukti?" So now you're going to get another tadfa here, because the Kazi is going to come, and you'll get the Quran. The Quran tattva. What is the Quran? What you refer to as the jiva, individual soul, we call ru. This ru is found in two conditions. Ru majarit, the conscious or liberated soul, and ru takibi, the conditioned soul. What you refer to as spirit, chit, we call mujarat, and what you refer to as matter, a chit, we call jiva. Mujarat is beyond the limitations of time and space, where jiva is subordinate to time and space. The conditioned soul, root Parkiti, or Buddhiji, as material mind is full of ignorance, malphut. The liberated souls, Rumajata, are pure and aloof from all these contaminations, and they reside in the spiritual abode, which is known as Alam al-Mashal. The will becomes pure through the gradual development of Ishya, prema. There is no influence of matter, jism, in that abode where Khoda, God, brought the prophet Habibah Sahib. Yet even there, the Ru remain as a servitude, Banda of the Ru, and the Lord of the Master. Therefore, the relationship between the Banda and the Khoda is eternal, and liberation, Mukti, is actually the attainment of this relationship in its pure form. The Quran and the literatures of the Sufis explain these conclusions, but not everyone understands them. Gauranga Mahaprabhu mercifully taught Shankazi all these points, and since that time we have become unalloyed bhaktis. Now, Alex, this is a little bit mind-blowing, isn't it? Pretty amazing, right? Just telling it everything. No subject left unturned in this book. Lahari, what is the primary teaching of the Quran? Kazi, according to the Quran, the Lord's personal abode, which is the highest attainment in the spiritual world, is known as Behesht. It is a fact that there is no formal worship there, yet life itself is worship, Ibadah. The residents of that abode are immersed in transcendental bliss through seeing the Lord. This is the same teaching that has been presented by Sri Gauranga. Lahari, does the Quran accept that the Lord has a transcendental form? Kazi, the Quran states that the Lord has no form. But Sri Gauranga Dev told Shankazi that this teaching of the Quran means that the Lord cannot have a material form. It does not preclude the existence of his pure spiritual form. Paigaba Shahib saw the divine loving form of the Lord in accordance with his level of eligibility. The transcendental moods and sentiments that are characteristic of the other rasas remain hidden from it. Lahari, what is the opinion of the Sufis in this regard? Kazi, they adhere to the doctrine of Ana al-Haq, which means I am Khoda. The Sufis' Ashra doctrine of Islam is exactly the same as the Advaita Prabhupada doctrine. Lahari, are you a Sufi? Kazi, no, we are unadulterated devotees. Gurundas are very light. The discussion went on for a long time, and finally, Kazi Shahib offered his respects to the Vaishnavas and departed. Harinam Sankirtan followed, after which the assembly dispersed. Thus ends the fifth chapter of Jiva Dharma. Vayu Bhakti is eternal. And I don't know, we'll see where it goes from here, but next to chapter 6 is Nitya Dharma, Race and Caste. And evidently, Hindu Das, the smarter Brahmin, gets out about this. And there's some difficulty. Okay, anybody like to ask a question or say hello? Oh, I have to unmute the whole thing. One second. Be right with you. Anyone like to say hello? Hare Krishna, anyone say hello today?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Gail.
Yeah, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for class.
Anybody else? You have some questions?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Vrajaradhe.
Hare go, Vrajaradhe. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Anybody else?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, Gordon Bhaktadas.
Wow, my stalwarts are here. Forward with me, go with that. Okay. Anybody else say hello? Okay. I'm going to burn out because I have a pretty busy day. I have to do my deity worship, then I get class at 8, then I get class at 9:30, then they take the group out on curriculum, and I get class at 4. So it's kind of a busy day, but thank you all. I want you to call up to the group.